good example before yesterday, and he's having a good start tonight, but like Chris Archer, if someone was panicking on him and really wanted to, you know, sell low, I mean, you know, grab Chris Archer. And there was so much speculation around him, and, you know, I did a chat. I had a question about him, and someone's like, what's wrong with him? And I ran through all the different things. It's like, well, the thing about Chris Archer is that as bad as he's been, he was still getting strikeouts. So it's not like Chris Archer was Adam Wainwright and was so bad that he was producing nothing. So it's like, why do you want to dump a guy who's still helping you somewhere and isn't a complete zero, you know, in competitive leagues? You know, in a 10-team mix, I could see where, you know, you bench Archer for a week or two and, until he figures it out.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 88 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and joining me, as always, is Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Mike, how's it going tonight?
Oh, pretty good. Can't complain too much. Unfortunately, my daughter, I didn't even tell you this before the show, so you'll be hearing this for the first time. My daughter broke her arm yesterday.
Oh, sorry to hear that. That stinks a show, yeah. Right now? Or
yeah, we haven't even had it set yet. The weird thing was it didn't seem like it was broken yesterday, but like she was kind of like, it looked a little worse today, and she was holding her arm kind of funny, so we took her to the doctor. They gave her an x-ray, and like, yep, it's broken.
Ouch!
Fortunately, it's not a compound, so you know it should be hopefully relatively easy to set and fix.
Well, that's good. I mean, I don't have kids yet. I'm not that old, so it's probably a good thing. But I can't even imagine what that must be like to have anything happen. That's not.
Yeah,
fun,
it's kind of scary. Well, thanks.
Yeah,
and also don't have kids.
Probably a good
enjoy
idea.
Enjoy your life.
Also, don't do what Tyler Collins did in Detroit tonight in the outfield. That probably wasn't good either.
Yeah,
did you see that play?
It's all over social media. He's going to get fined.
Well, he should get fined for the first part where he could not find the ball. That was a...
Yeah, but you can't flip the bird. And if you do, you know, at least use your glove and, like, try not to get caught.
There's cameras everywhere.
That's a problem nowadays.
When people learn this,
everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, an entertaining night so far. We got a good show. We're going to start off, as always, with a little bit of housekeeping. You can read us at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can email us, flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. As always, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you're using to listen to the podcast. Every rating, review, and subscription really helps us out, so we appreciate the support. What we're going to do, we're going to come back. We're going to talk Fab for Tout Wars and Labor. No Brett tonight. Brett is off. And we don't have a guest either for tonight.
I tried. The three guests were, let's see, one was, I won't say who they are, but one had a Little League game with his kid, which is out on the West Coast, which would explain why the timing. One's at a Springsteen concert, and one is at a bed and breakfast. So, yeah, various reasons people couldn't make it who I reached out to. But I tried.
The Springsteen show. I think that's every baseball writer's favorite artist, Springsteen. Correct?
Yeah, when the guy said that, I thought that was just such a cliche.
A little bit.
But I guess that's the thing. If you can't make a concert, I guess Springsteen's the... Or I guess if you can't make a podcast, a Springsteen concert's the way to go.
Do you think, like, people in Chicago say that about Theo, like, with Pearl Jam and stuff? Like, do you think that's, like, a running joke? In Chicago.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like,
Theo's at a Pearl Jam show.
The weird thing is, why is Pearl Jam, like, I like Pearl Jam, but why are they a Chicago thing? It's because he's a Cubs fan, I guess, because I always associate Pearl Jam with Seattle.
Well, I just know Theo Epstein was, like, a Pearl Jam guy. Like
he is, but I think Vedder's a Cubs fan too.
That's right. Well, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll dive into the Fab bidding in just a moment. And we're back. I forgot to do this at the top of the show. Lead off thoughts. Mike, you got anything for us tonight? Anything that's on your brain over the last couple of days?
No, just that, you know, we'll get into this later. I think this is a good time to start not pushing the panic button, but seeing how things on your team are shaking out and trying to see if there's maybe, if you haven't made a trade yet, kind of examine other teams, you know, look for other people who might be desperate or might be antsy. This is the time you're going to really start to examine stuff like that in my leagues.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. I mean, we get a ton of questions with the Bat Signal, which you should sign up for. It's a super premium membership with Baseball Prospectus. You can send us trade questions, pickup questions, whatever you have. And we get a ton of those every day. And some of the trades I see that are being offered are questionable, I think is the right word. I just think it's too soon where if you have a player who's struggling, and we talked a little bit about this last week with Brett Sayer, but if you have a top 100 type asset and they're struggling, if you try and trade them now, you're going to get absolutely nothing. It makes no sense to make a deal where that's the case. I think you're just better off holding for now. And if, you know, a couple of weeks from now or a month from now, as we get more towards middle of May, June, then you kind of sort of know where you're at. And I think if a guy rebounds even a little bit, you're going to be able to get a much greater return. So that's kind of where I stand on struggling guys. I mean, we touched on a little bit last week, but it's just too early to totally cut bait unless you're in like a keeper or dynasty league where you know you're not going to be competitive and you can deal veterans now. I think that's the only scenario where it makes any sense to be cutting bait on somebody who has a pretty established track record.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's hard to do because we're all parroting the same advice. You know, if there's a player out there, you know, good example before yesterday, and he's having a good start tonight, but like Chris Archer, if someone was panicking on him and really wanted to, you know, sell low, I mean, you know, grab Chris Archer. And there was so much speculation around him, and you know, I think I wrote about him last week because I got a question. Oh, I did a chat. I had a question about him, and someone's like, "What's wrong with him?" And I ran through all the different things. It's like, well, the thing about Chris Archer is that as bad as he's been, he was still getting strikeouts. So it's not like Chris Archer was Adam Wainwright and was so bad that he was producing nothing. So it's like, why do you want to dump a guy who's still helping you somewhere and isn't a complete zero, you know, in competitive leagues? You know, in a 10-team mix, I could see where, you know, you bench Archer for a week or two until he figures it out.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions about Adam Wainwright as well from people on Twitter and things like that. And that's maybe a little bit of a different story because he wasn't a huge strikeout guy to begin with. So the margin for error, and this is sort of my case against guys like the Kendall Gravemans of the world who we're going to get to, where if you don't have a high strikeout ceiling and you're struggling, there's really not a whole lot there. So, yeah, my leadoff thought, another great outing for Rich Hill. Very excited about that. He struck out 10 against the Yankees. He is strange as all get out. I've written about him once this year already for BP, but the thing is, he throws the curveball at 73 miles an hour, and that is maybe the pitch he has the best command of. So it really comes down to fastball command every start. If he's commanding his fastball and hitting his spots, he's incredibly difficult to hit. We've seen it a couple of times now, but he's made 8 starts dating back to last September. He struck out 10 batters or more in 5 of those 8 starts. There are only 9 pitchers who have more 10 strikeout starts over the last 2 seasons than that. And it's guys who, like you would expect, you know, the Archers, Kershaw, Syndergaard, guys like that. And all of them have done that in 25 or more starts. Hill's done that in 8. So he's a guy who's still out there, and I think it's like 75% of leagues, you know, last weekend. So I don't know what people are missing here on Rich Hill. Yeah, it's weird. It is a weird thing that's happening, but he's getting whiffs, and that's all that matters. So buy in on Rich Hill. I think this is the last week you're going to be able to do that and actually be able to go get him, because I think people are starting to buy in a little bit more now that he keeps striking out 10 guys.
I think people, you know, I think people overreacted on Hill last year, and you know, the first week, and
right,
you know, we just kind of saw the drop off where he went from people kind of being, I don't even say excited, but in February I saw where his ADP was, and all of a sudden, because of the bad spring, people just completely dropped off. And I can kind of get that in a mixed league, but even in a 15-team mix, if you dropped him or you kind of, you know, rushed to move him off your team, that was a mistake, because you know, he was another one. He was having command issues in spring training, but he was still getting strikeouts. He was still getting results. And the issue to me with Hill is just the durability. As a pitcher, I believe he'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. My only other note I found that was interesting, a lot of these stats I come up with using the Baseball Reference Play Index, but Marwin Gonzalez hit a home run on Sunday night. It was the 25th home run of his career, and this is a weird stat. He's never hit a home run with a runner on base. He has 25 career home runs, all of them solo shots. That's the weirdest stat ever.
That is very – I would not have expected that. That's very odd.
Watching the Red Sox Sunday night, that was that's the weirdest thing I can think of. So, all right, so let's not waste any more time, Mike. Let's dive right into Expert Fab. We're going to start with Labor Mixed, which you and Brett Sayer co-own. The big buy was Kendall Graveman, who got absolutely shelled tonight in Detroit. I don't even think he made it out of, what, four innings? Terrible.
He did not make it out of the fifth.
Yeah, brutal. Kendall Graveman.
Well, he was one of our backup bids, and thankfully we got our first pitcher who we'll kind of get to in a bit. But, yeah, you know, Kendall Graveman's one of those guys who, when he's on, he looks okay. He manages to get some ground balls. You know, I haven't seen all of his starts, but from what the start I saw, he's moved away from his fastball a little bit. He's throwing more sliders and cutters, but you're talking about a guy who entering today had a BABIP of 170 and a 91% strand rate. That just wasn't going to hold. And the other side of him, he's going to have outings like tonight where he just doesn't look good and he's hittable. You know, some was Miguel Cabrera, so it's like, okay, you're talking about one of the, you know, greatest hitters I've ever seen. But that's just Kendall Graveman. He's a guy, when he has his stuff, could be pretty solid. But he's not going to be the guy he was in his first three starts.
Yeah, that's my huge issue with Graveman, is whenever you have a guy with a strikeout rate as low as his, and his for his career is just over 6, I mean, your margin for error is so slim, where to be fantasy relevant, if you're not going to rack up strikeouts, you really have to have a lot go your way. And tonight, obviously, Graveman did not give up a couple of home runs. I just can't talk myself into Graveman. He's literally, I think, the inverse of Rich Hill, where Rich Hill is all strikeouts and maybe some wildness, and Graveman's pinpoint command, but he can get crushed sometimes.
My thing with guys like Graveman is it can take them, if they're going to make it at all, it can take them 3 or 4 years to do so.
Yeah.
So that's where it's tough. It's tough to go in on a guy in year one or year two. If you do it, and you know, I think the reason in labor, you know, I forgot who did it, but it was a 2-start week. You have to carry a guy active for the 1 week. It's probably looking at him as a streamer, and I think as a streamer, he's okay. But yeah, you just run that risk, and you know, the Tigers almost seem due.
Yeah, they've been floundering of late.
I hate to say that's a gambler's fallacy, but they just, you know, just from watching them, you know, they've been swinging well and just not hitting into good results. Almost seem like they're going to have one of these nights.
That's why you got to watch the games. JD Martinez is tearing the cover off the ball. He's looked good this year. Justin Upton, not so much. The league adjustment, the dreaded league adjustment, comes back to strike. We talked about that a lot with Brett, but
that's really his thing.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe in it a little bit more. The more I see guys come over to the American League or move away from the AL and struggle initially, I think it's It's a real thing.
Although, you know, Todd Frazier has, what, 4 home runs now? I know the average isn't great, but...
Right.
He's picked it up.
Not for every guy, but I think
it's 5 home runs now.
Yeah, I think in some cases it can be a real thing. So we'll see how that plays out. Graveman went for $7. The other guys who were sort of big bids, Jordy Mercer went for $5. David Phelps for $4. Aaron Blair, we're going to talk about later, he went for $3. Adam Duvall for $3. And you guys picked up Stephen Wright for $3. Stephen Wright's pitched pretty well for Boston.
He has. Now, you know, the thing about our labor team so far, so entering this week, we're in second place. And for the most part, things have gone pretty well. We're near the bottom in steals, which is weird on a team with Billy Hamilton. But otherwise, our offense has gone well. Our pitching has, you know, some of it's Jake Arrieta, but our pitching has done fairly well. We're getting saves because, you know, Andrew Miller's in there right now for the Yankees. The one thing we needed more than anything else was a starter at the bottom end to kind of just have to, you know, again, to stream. And you're right, Wright's done fairly well. I like him for matchups. I believe he gets the Braves this week, and that looks pretty good to me. We've started R.A. Dickey once. It's kind of weird. Brett and I have crossed the streams a little bit. I wanted to start Dickey this week for a 2-start week, and Brett voted against it, and we decided not to. And the other thing about Wright is we picked him up before today's news that Trevor Bauer was definitively going to be entering the rotation for the Indians, who we also have.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's nice to have options. You know, we obviously love Arrieta, but behind him, I'd say Michael Wacha and maybe James Shields are the only other auto starts. Everyone else, even Carlos Rodon, we saw it his last night against the Angels. We've got guys who I'd preferred to have the option to sit. You know, it's always nice to have options.
Yeah, that Carrasco injury is a real bummer. But it does open the door for Trevor Bauer, I guess. So that's one positive for you guys. But, yeah, Wright's not a bad play, especially that matchup against Atlanta. I mean, have you looked at Atlanta's lineup? Today they batted Freddie Freeman 6th. It's a disgrace.
They have three home runs the team, right?
Did I
see that?
I think Bryce Harper had that many last week. Absurd.
I know it's early and things will change, but yeah, they're on pace, I believe, to have 27 home runs for this season.
I don't even know how I'm supposed to react to that.
That's dead ball era. You know, again, the law of averages. We know Freeman will hit. We know, you know, guys like Adonis Garcia will probably pop like 8 to 10 home runs. It'll even out to a degree, but it's just such a bad offense.
I understand they're not. I don't think there's anything such as tanking. I don't think you can actually tank. I don't think that's a real thing. But they're in a rebuilding stage, and it's brutal. And you see this with a couple different teams. I mean, I've brought this up a couple times, but we're seeing some weird lines as a result of there being just a few, let's say 6 to 10, just terrible teams across both leagues. Where, you know, you see teams like the Reds, the Padres, just crooked numbers going up on the board. And I just think that's created some weird stat lines this year. Have you noticed that as well, that you're seeing some real lopsided scores in some games? And
Some lopsided scores and, you know, some pitching performances. You know, we saw this with Vincent Velasquez against the Padres. Some pitching performances that just seem out of whack. And, you know, I said this before the season, and I believe it's going to be borne out. The NL to AL difference is really going to be reflected in those pitching lines. In the past, we've always said, you know, when in doubt, draft an NL pitcher over an AL pitcher. That's really going to be true this year. You're going to see some splits between, say, the third starter in an AL versus the third starter in NL, where in a mixed league the value is going to be a lot closer of that 3 in the NL to a 2 in the AL.
Yeah, some other really weird starts I've noticed. Jaime Garcia against San Diego had that 13 strikeout game. Tanner Roark, I know it was against an American League opponent, but still the Twins, just a cellar-dwelling team. He struck out 15 over the weekend, so they're just some weird pitching performances that are happening as a result of there being a few just bad offenses and you catch them on the right day. And
bad offenses, more the strikeout isn't, even with good offenses, the strikeout isn't as verboten as it once was. You know, the Cubs have a great offense and they strike out a lot. It's just something, you know, the Royals, the exception, I think we've talked about this before, it's just not emphasized to the same degree. And so it's the umpires are calling a much larger zone and a lower zone than they probably should be.
All right. Any other names here for labor mix that we need to talk about?
Not really. We picked up Mark Reynolds for a buck, and some of that was, you know, the Rockies have three games at home this week against the Pirates, and they're facing two lefties, two fairly weak lefties too, in Jeff Locke and John Neese. But really, with A-Rod having an oblique tweak, with Byron Buxton flailing, and he got sent down today, we figured we wanted the hitter, so we went with Reynolds. And we got it for a buck.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Buxton overall? Because he didn't hit last year. He hasn't hit this year. Do you think they rushed him, and this is something we should have seen coming, that maybe he wasn't going to be successful this year? But other guys have come up and struggled and then figured it out, most notably a certain player who plays for the Angels. What do you think about Buxton overall? Because it feels like they rushed him too soon. How do you see this then playing out?
Yeah, he, you know, the difference between Buxton and Trout, and for that matter, a lot of players who came up, Buxton was hurt a lot. He's banged up. I don't want to call him injury prone, because they were, a lot of them were freaky injuries.
Right.
But be that as it may, we kind of knew that he never had a full season. I believe that the number was, 300, a little over 300 plate appearances in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I'm sorry, in AAA, I should say. So he needed the time, and he didn't get it, and he looked overmatched. I could see him with another half season to a full season in AAA being something. But to that point, yeah, I think the Twins brought him up too early. They looked at the defense. They thought the offense would catch up, and the offense just isn't there.
Yeah, I struggle, as you can see from the way I introduced this topic, I struggle with how to figure out Byron Buxton, because it's really hard to sort of definitively judge him at this point, because he's still developing. This is way too early to say anything final in terms of passing judgment on him. So I don't even know where to go from here. He's obviously going to go back to the minors. There's a chance he could be back up at some point. But I'm with you. I think they thought defensively. I mean, if you look at, like, Pecota, how it projected him defensively, he was projected to be one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. So
you can't strike out
in half your plate appearances.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even in this era of strikeouts, you can't strike out 50% of the time. And probably nowadays, 40% is where the flag should start going up, where it's like, gee, that's just a lot of strikeouts for anybody to succeed for a sustained period of time.
Yeah, unless you're going to hit for power like Chris Davis or Joey Gallo, that type of, you know, power. That's insane. National League. The big buy was Aaron Blair of the Braves. He went for $130 in FAB, which, remember, Tout Wars is $1,000 FAB. So that's not a huge buy, but it's pretty significant. And Aaron Blair struck out one batter and did not pitch all that well. I don't know what to make of Aaron Blair. I just don't see a huge ceiling here with him.
No, and that's what I see. I see a guy who the ceiling's probably a three and a low-end three at that. But the floor is high. He should stick in a major league rotation. You know, Wilson Karaman wrote about him in the call-up, one of our fantasy writers, and Wilson pegged it. He talked about a guy who can strike out hitters in the minors with the stuff he has, but is going to really have trouble delivering on those same punch-out pitches in the majors, and that's what we saw. He gets the Cubs this week. I do not like that matchup at all for him. I think even Anoli is a guy you start, but even Anoli, you have to watch the matchups a little bit and be careful with him. In deep mixed, where, you know, we mentioned before in labor, he went for three. You're talking about a streamer for very favorable matchups.
Right, and I think that's reflected in some of the other bids. Ray Guilfoyle actually purchased Blair, and this might be end up being a good move for him long-term because there's a good chance Blair sticks in that rotation. They don't have a reason to not pitch him and figure out what they have considering the state of their organization. But no one else bid more than $15. I think Todd Zola was at 13, and the rest of the bids were under 10. So I don't think anyone else is viewing Blair as a long-term solution either.
I think, you know, this doesn't show up on the Masters Ball Report, and you're kind of disadvantaged because you can't see behind the wall. I think somebody has a secondary bid in the 30s or 40s. But, yeah, to your point,
oh, okay.
Some of it is just the nature of the bid. Since they're blind bids, you know, I bid 104 on Shaquin last week, and it was a similar situation where the next highest bid was 32. So Ray probably saw that and thought, I need a starter. He is very thin behind his two aces in tout, and one of them is Matt Harvey, who's struggled. So he probably thought, you know, I've got all this fab at this point. I want the guy. I think he's going to stick. I understand the limitations. And, you know, that's what happens. So the $1,000 budget changes the way teams approach definitely changes the way teams approach their fab.
The Chassin report, he pitched okay the other day. I mean, look, he's not going to be an ace or anything. I think he's pitched pretty well so far. You're not blown away, but like he's not going out there and getting blasted every single time.
The problem I had, I watched a lot of that start. The problem I have with him is that, you know, George, you and I talked about this privately. When he isn't all there and his command's all off, he loses a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And that was what happened. He just wasn't – the command wasn't there. He looked very hittable. Now, the good news was, he kept ball in the park. You know, there was a lot of BABIP-influenced issues. But, again, for a guy like Shaquin, when it's not quite there, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, getting back to Blair, it's the same sort of thing. You know, Blair's outing looked okay, but he just as easily could have gone the other way and given up five or six runs in six innings or five innings, just because when you get hit, you give up a lot of contact that you can go either way.
Yeah, that's what separates the auto starts from the you have to pick your spots pretty selectively if you're going to use these types of guys. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good NL-only guy, though, I think. The other guy who was a big buy was Daniel Castro, also of the Braves. He went for $87. I don't know anything about Daniel Castro, and I follow the top 30s for every team. I can list most guys. I don't know hardly anything about Daniel Castro. I'm sorry.
He's not really a prospect. He's known for his glove. He's hit at every level, though. He's one of those guys, and you know, we're talking about him. Someone's hit for average at every level, not much else. He's one of those guys who will probably or could stick as a backup middle infield type because of the glove. You know, think someone like Cliff Pennington without quite as much speed. That's probably what you're looking at. I know it sounds rough, but we're talking about the 2016 Braves.
Can he pitch? So, Cliff Pennington
can
pitch.
Not that I'm.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's funny, but not that I'm aware of. But Castro, the one thing Castro's going for as a player, the contact rates are good. So he's got a good batting eye. He managed to get the bat on the ball. I think Sunday he was, 3-for-3 or 3-for-4? He's just somebody in NL only who could drag out a fair amount of value. You know, just if he does play all year. But we're not talking about anybody really special in real life.
The number two shortstop on ESPN's Player Radar right now is Aledmys Diaz. Just look that up.
And I think he's hitting like his OPS is something like ridiculous.
It's insane.
Drew Silva of RotoWorld, you know, pointed out that he compared Diaz and Albert Pujols' first 50 at bats or plate appearances. I forget it was, and they're like comparable.
Oh my gosh! Well,
he was being funny. Drew's a smart guy, but you know, it was just funny to see that.
You could do that with any selective. That's arbitrary endpoints right there, isn't it?
But Pujols. The point is that Pujols' numbers are like so good, and Diaz's numbers have been like a little better.
Cardinals are so strange, but Diaz has played well. I was just thinking of other unheralded infielders who've come up recently, and Diaz is tearing the cover off the ball. So maybe Castro will have a nice stretch here.
I doubt it, though. I mean, Jeremy Hazelbaker is another guy who people were talking about, and you know, I know he broke out of the slump that he was like 0 for 18 for a period.
Trevor Story has not hit very well lately either. So
no,
you missed your window if you still own him. Caleb Cotham, he went for $83. He could potentially close for the Reds. Tony Cingrani is the other candidate to close, but he's left-handed, and if he closes, they don't have another lefty in the pen. So I know they're the Reds, but that would put them at a huge disadvantage in late-inning situations. So I don't know how this is going to shake out, but I don't know if you want any part of this.
Yeah, it's NL only, so I could see why you'd put the bid down. The other thing to point out, too, there was a story over the weekend that Hoover said he discovered a flaw in his delivery and why he was having such bad results. Now, if I were mean, I could say that, well, you know, he's had bad results quite a lot throughout his career. But given the options there, it's entirely possible that, you know, if neither Cotham nor Cingrani establish themselves, you know, Hoover takes a job back in a couple weeks. So it's not a great fantasy situation. I could see that bullpen just shaking out where nobody, you know, pops over 20 saves. I'd go with Cotham. The weird thing about it is when you look at the usage patterns, you know, the Reds got clobbered by the Cubs this weekend. They won one game. It was a blowout. Cingrani was the guy pitching in the later innings. Now, they were losses, so you have to, again, grain of salt. But it is possible that Cingrani could be the guy just based on those usage patterns. But I don't want to read too much into tea leaves. That's Matt Collins' job, who writes our closer report, and I'll let him do that. But yeah, I'd probably lean Cingrani based on usage, but my gut here is just not to touch anybody. I put a very low bid on Cotham, and I knew I wouldn't get him.
Tony Cingrani, over under 10 saves the rest of the season.
Under, I say gets like 7 or 8.
That is not a ringing endorsement. No. Jamal Weeks went for $42. David Phelps for $37. You bought David Lowe for $27. Let's talk about that. David Lowe in Philadelphia.
I was just looking for a hitter. My bench is thin. And with Ben Paulson, you know, we mentioned Reynolds before. With Ben Paulson in Colorado, but with the Rockies facing a couple lefties, I figured he'd sit for his Coors games anyway. So it was a good time to take advantage of that and cycle another hitter in. So really, I was just looking for more depth. Lowe goes back to my bench next week, and he replaces Michael Morris, who got cut, as my in-case-of-injury backup guy.
You also bought Neftali Feliz for $5. I loved that pickup until about 24 hours ago when he got shelled in a, I believe it was a safe situation, correct?
It was, because yeah. Mark Melancon, who I also have, blew the save in regulation.
Yep. So, bad news there, but
yeah, he'll be fine. That was one game.
Feliz has pitched reasonably well there in Pittsburgh, so I kind of like that pickup a little bit. Wilson Contreras got picked up for $1. That's intriguing.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. You know, NL only two catcher league, if you're going to carry zeros for a week, that's the position to do it.
If you don't know who he is, he's a catcher in the Cubs system, and you should know about him because he can hit.
If you don't know who he is, I really think you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Hey, now we'll you can listen. You can keep listening even if you don't know. Some interesting guys who didn't get picked up. I like Kyle Bearclaw. Have you seen him pitch lately?
I have not.
Oh, he looks good. He had command issues and he didn't make the team for Miami out of spring training, but he's back up. He has not walked anyone. He's thrown a couple scoreless innings. The strikeouts are there. We talked about him a bunch last year, so if you're in an NL only, he's a guy I would kind of go get if you need a reliever. I think he's gonna be pretty good. Derek Law is another guy I like too, that's probably out there. So all right, anything else for the NL, or do you want to move to the AL?
Let's move to the AL. It was a pretty quiet week on the whole.
Yeah, it's reached that point in the year. aside from call-ups, there aren't a whole lot of interesting guys out there. Ezekiel Carrera was the big buy in AL labor, Tout Wars AL. $78 to Jason Collette. Ezekiel Carrera. I guess he's not the most interesting buy of the week for me, though. We'll get to that in a minute, but yeah, he's okay.
Well, the weird thing about Carrera to me is that so he played, but you know, Michael Saunders was out with a minor hamstring injury. Saunders is back tonight. I know Chris Colabello got suspended, but Justin Smoke is going to be the beneficiary. It's really hard to see where Carrera gets the at bats.
Yeah, that would have been my point. I think unless you're really concerned about Michael Saunders, and I don't think there's a reason to be unless he's having knee troubles again. Yeah, there's just not a whole lot there. Rafael Ortega went for 55, DeLore Michaels. He's batting second for the Angels, which doesn't make any sense, but he is. So we'll see how that goes.
It's just a bad lineup. And you know, outside of Trout and Pujols and Calhoun, just a bad team.
Well, I was very bullish on Albert Pujols in the preseason, and I got to admit, he has, I think I can say this, he sucked. He went 0 for 26 at one point last week before hitting a home run on Sunday. He's been just not good. If he's not hitting it out of the park, he's not getting on base at all. It's awful.
But, you know, the new Pujols, he's just a streaky hitter.
Yeah, but you have to ride out just these excruciating stretches with him, I think, and that's not fun. So, I really have been disappointed so far with Pujols. The interesting buy for me, Yoan Moncada for $21. I don't see a way he comes up this year. It seems impossible to me. Yet,
yeah, I don't see it either.
We saw this with Benintendi last week, correct? Where someone was it Chris as well, or who?
Chris List. And here's the thing about Chris List. So Chris now he has Benintendi. He's got Moncada. He's got Joey Gallo, and he's got Buxton. So it's kind of this idea that I like the idea in Tout Wars of stashing a guy or two like this. If your whole reserve list is filled with stashes, I mean, they all, at least two of them have to hit and hit pretty early for it to work.
See, Gallo's different because he was in the majors last year. There's a chance, Adrian Beltre got hurt tomorrow, there's a pretty good chance he's up, you know?
Right, Moncada's in Salem.
Yeah, he's in, single A. I can't not. Yeah,
it's high A, but still.
Right. I don't see it. If anyone's going to get the call, it's Sam Travis, the kid who they have, and they started him at Pawtucket this year.
Keep in mind that this is Liss's MO, and you know Chris is obviously very smart, and he won Tout Wars last year. He knows what he's doing, but for the most part, you know, he got Correa last year early as well. But for the most part, these moves haven't worked out for him.
I just think he's...
On the other hand, though, all you need is one or two of these moves to work out to really hit.
Look, I love the players. Benintendi and Moncada are great, but they're in high A. I mean, it's the odds of them actually getting to the big leagues are Correa was in Double A last year to start the year. He had played in Double A the year before. I just think he's gone too far down on these. I'd be shocked if Moncada played in the big leagues this year. Yeah, I really would be. I think they need something catastrophic to happen.
To be fair about Moncada, where he was going in NFBC leagues, he was going at a point where he was like a reserve type pick in 15-team mixed leagues. So the attitude, and I agree with you, it's an incorrect attitude. The attitude certainly was out there.
Well, the only way this happens. No, I'm not even going to go there. It'll make Ben Carsley really sad. And I don't think we want to go there. Sorry, Ben.
I think Ben's asleep already by now if he's listening, so yeah, don't worry.
That's fair. So the real interesting buy I liked was Mike Zunino for $18. He looks okay. I think he's – didn't he add sort of a or decrease the leg kick? I know he did something with his swing.
I think that's correct.
We need Meg Rowley on here to discuss this.
Well,
more
you know,
depth,
the funny thing about Zunino is so I talked to Meg, mm-hmm. and she told me that she thinks that Zunino probably won't be up until July. Her feeling, and Meg's a Mariners writer, so, she knows of these things, is that unless Chris Iannetta completely tanks, that they want to be really patient with Zunino this time and make sure they get it right.
That's sort of like what Texas is doing with Joey Gallo, who we talked about a minute ago.
I mean, the difference there is that, Chris Iannetta and Steve Clevenger are not Adrian Beltre, which is one of the funniest things you'll ever hear me say. And one of the most obvious things you'll ever say. But the point being that if the Mariners wind up in contention, or let's say it's June 1st, and like, oh, gee, things are going well, but, we're close, but we're not quite there. And Mike Zunino at this point has, 18 home runs in AAA. They might be like, what the heck?
Well, he's already like halfway to 18 home runs.
He's got
seven, that, right?
I believe.
Yeah, in 64 plate appearances, he's got seven bombs. He's hitting .407. Now, it's the PCL, but if you go look at the league averages and the benchmarks for the PCL, they're like 100 points lower than that. So his OPS is 1285. That's very high. So Mike Zunino, potentially a person of interest, especially with the catcher eligibility. I like that buy for Ron Chandler, Godfather.
It's okay. I just do wonder. I do wonder again with catchers. I mentioned Contreras. If there's a position that you're going to do that and just waste zeros for a week, that's the position.
Anyone else that we want to talk about here? There's not a whole lot. Zach McAllister is kind of just, he's okay. He went for 11.
A lot of setups of middle relievers like that who are okay for only, but we don't really need to dive into. Kevin Smith, not the director / writer / actor /
the King
comic
of Queens?
Book guy, is, yeah, that's a different Kevin.
Oh, really?
But he, oh, God, how, wait a minute.
I'm confused here. How many Kevin Smiths are there?
No, you're mixing up, and I think we've had this.
Oh, Kevin James.
Before. Yeah, you're mixing up Kevin James and Kevin Smith.
I can't believe
Kevin
I did
Smith
that.
Is the Clerks guy.
Oh, that's
and
right.
The guy who does that show now on, I don't know what channel, it's like the comic book show. Kevin James is King of Queens.
Ah, damn it. And Paul Blart.
Yeah, that's right. Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
They made a sequel of that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We've gone off the rails. I think it's time to wrap up.
I can't even talk about Paul Blart because it just makes me sad.
How many times have you seen it?
I've never seen it.
What?
No, my kids aren't quite that old yet.
Really?
We saw Zootopia this weekend. That was, or last weekend. That was pretty good.
That's the one with the sloths working at the DMV.
Yeah, that's the joke from the trailer. But there's some good jokes in the movie too. They don't blow the good joke in the trailer. There's some good jokes in the movie as well.
All right, no spoilers. Anything else we have to talk about here? Because
I don't think so. we're 3 weeks in. We're starting week four. We'll get into our next topic, but you don't want to overly start investing in things. But you do. This is where you, like I said, you kind of start looking at your team. You start looking at players and. It's a delicate balance between, not overemphasizing things, but also paying attention a little bit to what's happening and not just screaming small sample size over and over into the void.
Yeah, I think there's small things that you can look at that are significant. Why don't we just dive into the next segment now? You ready to do that? We'll just go through it quickly. We're kind of up against
sure.
it. So.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Well, some of the things I kind of look at, we're at that point in the year where I'll start to look at a leaderboard and I look for almost, not exactly anomalies, but I look for things that are changing about a guy's profile. I look at Brooks Baseball. I look at the Pitch FX data, who's changed their pitch usage, how that's impacted their results so far, what's sustainable, what isn't. I think that's the type of stuff that I'm starting to just look at now. And you also have to factor in injuries. those types of things, playing time situations. It's all kind of where we're at right now, because you look at, there's still so much that's going to happen that you can't make a judgment. If you have a hitter who's struggling, I know for me, I have a bunch of guys like that, like the Jose Abreus, Justin Upton's, Albert Pujols, guys like that, that I can't do anything with. They're just struggling and you have to ride it out, and it kind of sucks, but there's not a whole lot you can do, because Jose Abreu is going to hit. We don't know when it's going to happen, though. And if you trade him now, you're not going to get even close to a fair return on that. So it's tough if you're really far out of the standings. If you're in a redraft and you get down in the standings, it's really tough to resist the urge to do something. But oftentimes, you just have to ride this out, because you drafted the team you thought was the best possible team you could, you know, less than a month or two ago. You have to ride this out.
Yeah. I don't see too many examples where, you know, it's kind of a catch-22. We mentioned Wainwright last year last week on the show. So if you drafted Adam Wainwright and you want to bail, at this point, what are you possibly going to get for him in trade? The answer is next to nothing. Because everyone else is going to be concerned with Wainwright, is going to tell you, well, yeah, he could bounce back, but I'm not going to trade you much to find out.
I think it's harder with pitchers. Would you say that?
Yeah, it's harder with pitchers, because with hitters, unless you can see something that's really wrong, and usually, like you're saying, it's not even something in the numbers. It's something at the plate. Like, if you see a hitter who, you know, the swing looks bad, or, you know, he's bailing out, or he's doing something where you're like, oh my goodness, this does not look like the hitter that I'm used to seeing. A lot of times, just data points. Like, if you watch Justin Upton, what's wrong with Justin Upton? The answer to me is nothing, at least nothing I can see.
No.
So that makes me believe that, well, you know, there's a good chance Justin Upton is going to go on one of those streaks he goes on where he hits like 5 home runs in 2 weeks and hits 400 or 450. And you kind of shrug and you're like, well, you know, it's Justin Upton. He's a streaky guy. You know, I'll be fine. Jason Hayward's on. He's slow starter the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I went and looked this up. You know, Jason Hayward's going to eventually hit and he'll be fine.
I talked about this last week with Mookie Betts. He was right around 200 through 2 weeks. And since that point, he's catapulted all the way to the, I think it's like the number two spot on the player rater for ESPN I was looking at today. He's way up there.
I don't know how high he is, but I have him in my home league, my home AL. Yeah. So yeah, I was even frustrated because he had a couple steals, I think, and he had done some stuff. But yeah, all of a sudden he had like a week out of his mind. And that's the other thing with hitters, to your point, George, is all it takes for a hitter, and a talented hitter too, they have one of those weeks that's just insane, even this week. And suddenly they're right back up there and they're pretty close where they should be.
Yeah, all hitters are sort of inherently streaky. So once a guy starts hitting the ball hard, even if they're not falling, I mean, even the ones Mookie Betts doesn't have drop for hits, I mean, they're line drives like right at an outfielder. I mean, so just watch about a week or so of plate appearances and then make a real determination. Just really commit to watching an extended period of at-bats. Like, a good example I've given so far in the last couple episodes, I've talked about, like, Danny Valencia. He has the hamstring injury. He's going to be out another week or so, but he's coming right back. And based on the at-bats I've seen and the exit velocity, once it starts to heat up, I mean, he's going to start really driving the ball. And I believe in sort of him coming back and putting together a good season. There are guys like that where if you've watched the at-bats, you go, okay, the results aren't there, but I can see it, which is exactly what you're talking about, Mike. But with pitchers, we have so much data now that between the pitch FX stuff and you know, that type of information where you can see velocity, you can see pitch usage, it's really difficult to try and sell somebody like an Adam Wainwright who's struggling, because everyone else can see the same things you're seeing. It's not like it used to be anymore with pitchers. Maybe it was a decade ago when we didn't have pitch FX and we couldn't see these problems.
The problem with that, though, there's a few problems with that. So, you know, Jake Arrieta last week pitched a no-hitter, and before that happened, there were a lot of people, you know, we're saying he was good, but Noah Syndergaard was the guy who was like, oh, is he the number two guy? Is he right behind Kershaw? Arrieta throws a no-hitter, and all of a sudden it flips the other way, where everybody's like, you know, oh, Arrieta's the number two, and he could do this every time out, blah, blah, blah. And the reality is like, well, what's changed with Jake Arrieta? And the answer is nothing. He's an excellent pitcher. And the funny thing about that game, and Ryan Watt over at Wrigleyville wrote about this, you know, and Ryan's a Cubs fan. He writes to the Cubs, so he's certainly not anti-Arrieta. He pointed out Arrieta didn't have his best stuff. And, you know, if you asked Arrieta about it, he wouldn't disagree. But he managed to, you know, kind of pitch around that. And he pitched to an approach during the game where he didn't nibble exactly at the beginning, but he was fine. And then the last two innings, he kind of bore down where he was like, well, like, I'm either going to get this no-hitter or, you know, they're going to hit me. But I'm not going to be able to do it on 140 pitches. Like, he just kind of made a decision, like, I'm going to throw strikes, and if they, you know, hit me, fine. If they don't hit me, well, then great, I'm going to get my no-hitter. But the point being is that we kind of look at these pitch FX numbers and parse things. You know, it's important to point out for a lot of pitchers, their velocity is just down in April. Arrieta, I went back and looked at his April 2015. His velocity was the lowest by month, you know, in 2015, and then it ticked up. You know, for a lot of guys, they're still kind of working into shape during the season. It's not quite the same for them in terms of what they're doing. So that's one of those markers that you have to be a little bit careful about. If you look at a guy, I'd say if he's a mile and a half down from the season before, go back and look at his April numbers, you know, and see if he's one of those guys who starts out slow. You know, if he's 3 miles down, then yeah, you want to be like, okay, that's a lot. I want to know what's going on there, and I want to know why. But there's so much information with the FX. I sometimes think that too much of it is a dangerous thing.
Yeah, the thing with average velocity is for every guy you can give an example of who the velocity dropped and there was no injury, there was no anything, someone can give you five examples the other way. So there's no good way to talk about it, almost. Because I remember having this conversation about Wade Davis with somebody on Twitter, and I won't name names. I don't, you know, it's not anything like that.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. You know, but there was some concern, oh, Wade Davis' velocity down, and I was like, well, okay, maybe it's just a dead arm, which is exactly what Wade Davis talked about once the season started. He was going through a period where he kind of had a little bit of dead arm, and it wasn't throwing as hard as he normally does, and he was pitching fine. He wasn't injured, so that can happen to guys. So, and then there are cases where there are legitimate injuries and there are issues. So, it's difficult sometimes to know what you're looking at in some cases. But you kind of laid out a good way to approach that with looking at the previous year's logs of data and seeing where you're at with a guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for this? I think we've kind of touched on everything so far.
I think we covered it. And, you know, I know a lot of this, we're sort of repeating ourselves a lot in April. But partially to me, because this is an important message, and it's a little bit more important now. This is where I believe a lot of savvy owners the first week know better than to, you know, jump all over results.
Yeah.
The third week is where the danger zone is where, or week four, where you start thinking, oh, you know, now I've got all of this demonstrable evidence and I can act and I can do something, you know, to make a difference. And I'm not saying that you can't. I agree there are cases where you have something actionable, but chances are more often than not you don't. So what I'm saying is just be careful.
Yeah, that's a good point. It sounds like we're repeating ourselves and giving this warning about everything. But you know what? We could do a show where I sit here and I go, wow, Mark Trumbo is really tearing the cover off the ball. He's hitting 15 to 17 games and he's hitting 370. And like that doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things because of just these small size of data we're using. I don't think it's significant enough. Yeah, it's great that he's hitting. That's encouraging, but let's talk in a month. And then we'll reevaluate Mark Trumbo in a month or two.
Yeah, you know, although Trumbo's funny because he's a guy where he shouldn't be doing this well, but based on the swing profile and based on the approach, I could see the average going up because he's swinging at fewer balls outside of the zone and he's making some smarter plays. So based on the data, yeah, I want to see where he is in a month because maybe the approach goes away. Maybe he faces tougher pitchers. Maybe the pitchers make the adjustment. But if this is like the new Trumbo, he's not going to do what he's doing now. But a Trumbo hitting 270 in that park is kind of a, you know, an exciting thing to look at.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to do before the show that as an exercise, as opposed to what we did here with the discussion, was to look at some players from April of 2015 and kind of run through their numbers and say, you know, a kind of a would you or won't you. So here's last year. Here's two pitchers. I'm going to go pitcher A and pitcher B. And you tell me yay or nay on these guys.
Oh, do you want to do it blind, read me the numbers and have me guess?
These are blind. That's the thing. I'm not giving you the names.
Okay.
So pitcher A, 0-2, 5 starts, 26 2/3, 8.77 K per 9, 2.7 walks per 9, 1.35 homers per 9.
I think I know who this is.
5.74 ERA, 4.03 FIP.
I can tell you who this is.
Do you want him for the rest of the season, or are you like, no?
I'll tell you who this is. I think I know who this is because
I
remember.
If you do.
I remember them being so bad that they got dropped everywhere, and I ended up with them in a bunch of places. I'm going to say Mike Fiers.
It is not.
Oh.
It's James Paxton.
Really?
Yeah. So here's pitcher B.
Is this Mike Fiers?
One and one. I did not choose Fiers for this exercise.
I'm gonna
Four starts, 22 innings, 6.55 K per 9, 2.05 walk per 9, 1.23 home run rate, 6.55 ERA, 4.41 FIP. Do you want this guy for the rest of the season or no?
ERA over 6?
Yeah, he had a 6.55 in April.
Taiwan Walker?
No, that's a good guess based on what he did.
Mm. I was close.
It was Jose Quintana.
I love Jose Quintana.
Who I know, and a lot of people do, and he finished with a 3.36, and I'm willing to bet you that a lot of people dropped Jose Quintana, and I would say even in a 15-team mix, people were like ripping their hair out and saying, should I drop him based on that start? And this just enforces that idea, and I bring up Quintana because Quintana certainly, he's not an ace, he's not a top-of-the-rotation guy, but he's this consistent, underrated guy who, you know, you look at his ERAs going back 2013, 3.51, 3.32, 3.36. He's a really good pitcher, and he's somebody, you know, the wins have kind of stunk for him, you know, hopefully for his sake and his fantasy owner's sake, the White Sox do better. But he's just one of those pitchers who is always going to produce for you. If you reacted to April last year, you made a big mistake. And, you know, if you either traded him on the cheap or, you know, you put yourself in a position where you benched him for a few weeks, you lost out. So, yeah, again, I think the point here with this and these two pitchers is that sometimes we look for improvement based on FIP and based on some other indicators. With a guy like guys like Paxton versus Quintana, I kind of like to look at the past more than like someone like Paxton who hadn't done it before, to kind of see where a true talent level might land.
By the way, I looked up those Mike Fiers numbers. His first 7 starts from April 10th to May 12th last year. In 36 innings, he went 2-5 with a 5 ERA, and he gave up 6 home runs, 20 earned runs over that stretch. He had a 3.87 BABIP. So you remember Mike Fiers threw a no-hitter later on in the year. So, I mean, he had some pretty good starts once he got to Houston. So, you know, it's early. Let's not overreact. This is why I was beating the drum for Rich Hill last week, because I think there is some sort of an area where with lower-end starters especially, people cut bait really early. You brought up Quintana from last year, but some people are you know, quick to drop those types of guys, and I think there is some sort of an advantage to be gained by taking a chance on picking up those types of guys if they hit the free agent market, the wire in deeper formats.
Yeah, I got, you know, in a 12 team mixed, I wound up picking up Drew Smyly after someone dropped him after his one bad outing. I was like, what? You know, I'm actually like, oh, thank you.
I was happy to get Rich Hill in a league. I was like, oh yeah, all right. But yeah. Clearly I like Rich Hill. It's I just think he's so fascinating. I mean, he's weird. All right, anything else we have to talk about?
I think we're good. I think we covered this well. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think this is better than just listing a bunch of guys and saying, wow, they're off to a good start. Let's see how he does. You know, I don't see a whole lot of value in that type of analysis at this point in the year. So awesome. All right. So we're gonna take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up in just a moment here on Flags Fly Forever. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 88 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read us and the entire fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com all season long. Sign up for a super premium membership today. You get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question anytime and you get a response within 12 hours, oftentimes much faster than that. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Mike is at Mike Gianella. He is the punster of Twitter. He will entertain you at all hours of the day. You can email us at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Finally, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. I'm Mike Gianella. This is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show next week. Good night, everybody.
See you next week. Let me make like a super old cultural reference now, and then you can like weave that into the show too.
If you want, Kevin James was a pretty old reference. I feel like.
Oh my god, dude!
Kevin Smith, same thing. I don't know.
We could talk about Soap, one of the best TV shows and or comedies Soap? In the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah.
What? Please explain.
It was a show that had like Billy Crystal, like before he was like, you know, really famous, but there were like a bunch of other people, and it was a comedy, but it was like a parody of soap operas.